Today I want to ask a single question. What is your intention? If you know the true intention of why you do things, you can commit more fully to doing those things, or you can modify your intention, or you can change the direction of your activity entirely. Knowing your intention is very empowering. If you don't know our true intention, we have to be acting robotically or reactively or automatically without full awareness of what it is we're doing. And being unaware of why we do things, you know that's got to be reducing our chances of success and fulfillment that we might otherwise get from those activities. Because everything is energy, looking at our intentions as they relate to energy is going to usually bring us a little closer to the discovery of our true intentions. We have needs. Needs are different than wants or desires. Needs are, I could say, hardwired or programmed into living beings. So we are automatically going to seek to fulfill those needs. Talking about needs in human beings can be narrowed down for convenience sake, because it's a very, very huge field of discussion. But for convenience sake, I could say we could narrow it down to 7 needs or 11 needs. Using a model I learned 20 plus years ago, consists of survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, the need to be right, and the need to look good / get approval. Guess what? We need to survive. We need feelings of freedom. We need feelings of usefulness. We need feelings of love. We need feelings of being loved as well as being able to love. We need an identity to live within. You can almost see that as an energetic pattern that we live within. And it constantly grows and develops, not unlike our bodies. And you go, okay, that makes sense. Certainly we have a need to be right. And we have a need to look good and get approval for others. And when you look at those things, you go, you know what? That makes sense. All 7 of those needs are about having enough energy, using our energy, being aware of our energy, and getting more energy, and protecting the energy that we have so we don't lose it. If we add in the 4 driving needs of the ego expressed through the personality as described by Christ in Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth, we can see the relationship of getting and keeping energy even more clearly and where our attentions will take us. Driving need number 1 is defined as the need to defend the self from criticism, emotional, or physical attack. That need shows up not just purely defensive, like we're not just protecting ourselves from incoming energy signals. We, in fact, will turn around and use certain strategies, certain characteristics, certain energy patterns as an offensive weapon, too. Think we use criticism, we use judgmentalism, sarcasm, violent impulses or the threat of violent impulses and so on, sarcasm and a bunch more in an effort to diminish the energy of what we perceive to be a threat. Not only are we defensive, but we very often go on the offensive with our intentions. Until we set and fulfill the intention to rise above the ego's method of satisfying our needs, we're going to continue to harvest the seeds we have sown, right? You go, if we use criticism as a way to keep ourselves safe, we're going to harvest criticism. If we use emotional or physical attack as a way to defend ourselves from criticism, emotional or physical attack, we're going to harvest emotional and physical attack. The law of cause and effect says we're going to reap what we sow. And our intentions set up what we sow. The better intention, maybe even the best intention regarding protection, is to allow divine consciousness to work for us, in us, and through us. We know it's happening, right? We know we've got an immune system. We know we've got all kinds of systems within the body. We know we have skin, hair. All this stuff is designed to protect us. So when we really get it, our egoic intentions and actions are going to be less frequent and less powerful. On a simple level, we might feel that our safety comes from getting people to obey our, in quotes, our rules of life, or forcing others to obey our rules of life. The truth is, our safety comes from us obeying our own rules of life and our recognition of the spiritual law and order that exists. When we obey our own rules and we understand these spiritual laws, our chances of being safe are so much greater. It is disturbing to our peace to act in opposition to these higher intentions. I did it the other day. I had the experience of trying and succeeding at imposing my rules on another person. He was sitting in his parked car in front of a hotel, but he was positioned so that if another car came, it couldn't get past him. That's against my rules. So this is what I did. I pulled up and, sitting in my idling car, just occupied that position as if I wanted to move forward. Now, he was clearly waiting for somebody that was inside of the hotel. So was I. Marianne had gone in to check us in, and so that person probably was doing the same thing. That's customary. So he was waiting, or she was waiting, and I positioned myself that it looked like I wanted to get through. But here's what happened. My intention was to impose my rule. My rule is, when you're in a situation like that, you need to have your car over in case another car comes. But of course, if another car came, he could very easily move over. But that's not how I operate. That's not my rule. My rule is, you need to be over whether cars are coming or not. And so, that's what I was trying to do. And so, he saw me, and then finally he decided, not finally, it was a minute or 2 minutes, he pulled over to the right, so if I wanted to, I could get past him. I didn't want to get past him, because I was waiting on Marianne. So I simply backed up and pulled forward way over to the right. So now I wasn't blocking another car that was coming. I thought, And after the fact, I realized that didn't feel good. What I just did didn't feel good. I regretted what I did. I could have been thoughtful. I could have been kind. I could have obeyed my own rule. But that's not what I did. My rule about positioning yourself so the cars can get through. So I was violating my rule, but I was so interested in his, quotes, violation of my rules that I wasn't focused very well. So when we got into the hotel, I looked for this man because I wanted to apologize to him because I felt bad about it. I regretted this. I wanted to say, I'm sorry, there was no need for me to do that. I could have. Now, I have no idea what he thought about this whole thing, but my peace was disturbed by my actions and my intention to impose my rules on somebody else. His actions didn't really disturb my peace. My actions disturbed my peace. My intention to be right and enforce my rule is what produced a negative harvest for me. And rightfully so. knowing that we are directly and maybe even dramatically affected by ego drives, right, can alert us to the fact that everybody else is seeking to defend themselves, to come in first in the race of life, to take what's best for them no matter what, to hold on to their possessions no matter what. By knowing this, that we're doing it and everybody else that we are going to encounter are, to a large extent, going to be operating by these same ego drives, it gives us a chance to go like, whoa, 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 now I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. It's kind of like knowing what gear you're in when you're driving your car. Are you in the ego drive? Oh, yeah, yep, I was. Controlling other people, making other people do things. And then when we become aware of that, we're better able to shift out of that. We're better able to master our ego. I use the, what I call my energy model of life as a framework that helps explain and maybe even predict human behavior. Knowing that we're going to acquire energy, preserve it, translate it, express it, release what we can't use, and then see closure positions us to go, oh yeah, yeah. Now, knowing that I'm doing that and everybody else is doing that, gives us an opportunity to set our intentions on each of those phases. We don't have to be, I say, robotic. We don't have to be mindless. We don't have to be reactive. We don't have to be cruel with regard to the intentions. If we're going to acquire energy, it's like, how am I going to acquire energy? Mug somebody? Steal? Embezzle? Scam? Well, those are very popular strategies out there, but not that good of an idea, of course. But we can choose how we look at things. We can set these intentions up so they're going to produce the results that we want. Results that will be even better in a lot of times than the ones we set when we set our intentions. The universe, divine consciousness, has an exciting way of saying, you know what? I got that. You want X. Why don't I give you 2X or X plus Y? Oh, that's a fairly common occurrence when we can release our intentions and let them be fulfilled. I would say that by, aligning our life with what Christ describes in letter one of Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, the truth of existence, right? Divine consciousness is providing for us. Doesn't it make sense that we would want to align our intentions with divine intentions? Like, oh, if the divine intention is this, I think I'm gonna go along with that idea. I'm going to try to align with that. And if divine intention is providing for our growth, our nutrition and nourishment, our healing, our protection, our fulfillment of every need, and work, providing for our survival, providing for rhythm, and operating all of this under spiritual law of cause and effect. You go, if we did that, if we were aligned with those energies, if that were our intention, we're going to be in a position to create some really wonderful lives. If we add in the fact that the divine consciousness is caring for the well-being of all of its creations by working for, by working in, and by working through its creations, maybe we could appreciate that, hey, there's value to me in balancing my self-interest with the self-interest of others. There's value to me intending to act with brotherly love toward other creations. There is value to me to ultimately work toward achieving unconditional love. Simply because I will become, and you would become, more effective at letting the divine work for us, in us, and through us. How can that not be great for our lives, for our health, for our fulfillment, our happiness, our success? Of course it would be. If we intend to create happy, healthy, successful, fulfilling lives, intending to think thoughts, feel feelings, speak words, take actions that are going to produce harmony, that will then produce the results that we desire on our path, we've got to be in a much better place. Maybe that fork in the road, let's imagine there's a fork in the road regarding the setting intention. I'll describe it this way. One fork in the road is, I intend to acquire all the physical stuff, all the things I want in life. You quickly would go, that seems pretty materialistic. And it is. It is. And that is a driving point of view for many people. It is stuff, things, material things, money, otherwise, objects, and the power to get them is what makes a person happy. Okay, that's one fork in the road. The other fork in the road could be, I intend to acquire all the consciousness I can in life so that I can understand life, capital L-I-F-E, more fully. This is obviously a more spiritual approach to life. So, do we go for the physical, material, or do we go for the spiritual, the consciousness, the awareness? We're setting our intentions all the time, and we're going to be at that fork in the road, I think, probably hundreds of times a day, if we're aware. Here are some of the main problems with the concept of intentions. Number one, we don't understand how powerful our intentions can be if we use them effectively. It's like having this unbelievably powerful tool, and we're not that skilled at it. It's like having a computer and like, yeah, I use it as a paperweight. I don't know how to turn it on, or even if there is an on switch. They're like, ooh, that's not too good. We don't understand the ramifications of using intention haphazardly. We are going to use intention. It is built into us. We have attention and we have intention. And it is this focusing that if we do it haphazardly, it's like, whoops, that's not the result I wanted. Whoops, that's not the result I wanted. No kidding. We reap what we sow. And intention is how we determine what we will sow. And as a result, it determines what we will reap. Like, so if I intend to dominate somebody, that's going to produce a harvest of being dominated. Yep, that's how it works. Okay, that's a problem. Yes, it is. And we don't really get that. Intention is our facility, it's our capability, it's our talent, it's a divine gift that allows us to focus light, and I'll spell that with a capital L, L-I-G-H-T. We focus light in order to bring a condition into physical manifestation. It's like, oh, that's how that happens? That's what brings things into physical manifestation? Intention? Yeah, yep. In alignment with attention, yep, the addition of those energies is what brings things into physical manifestation. So it makes sense that you'd want to do that mindfully. Mm-hmm. We are subject to intentions, either our own intentions or somebody else's, our ego intentions or someone else's, our highest intentions or someone else's. If we know that this is happening, these energy flows, these pulls and pushes, these holds and shoves and stuff, like, oh, yeah. I need to understand the intention of other people before I go along with it, before I commit to fulfilling their intentions. You betcha. You betcha. Here's a funny thing I saw the other day. It was a one-star review of Uber taxi drivers. And this was wonderful. The reason I'm giving this guy a one-star review is he refused to put on the mask and drive me to the bank. Now, that's silly, right? But there's somebody's intention, making fun anyway, of going to the bank and robbing it and getting this guy to act as the getaway driver. And obviously, the driver thought, that's not such a good intention. I'm not going to go along with this intention. Now, that's a silly one, but other people, peer pressure, right? Other people politically are trying to convince you to do something, but you go like, what are your intentions here? Uh-huh. We can set our intentions and then let go so the divine energy can facilitate those intentions. The trap for us as human beings, and when we listen to our egos, is I have to control everything. Otherwise, I'm not going to get what I want. The trouble is, trying to control everything is going to thwart our intentions, because we're going to be, it's like pushing divine consciousness out of the way. Get out of the way. I have to do this, because if I don't do it, it's not going to happen. And divine consciousness is busy trying to provide support to us to fulfill and bring our intentions into physical manifestation. And there we are, pushing it away as by our own ego need to control. And it's fear. It's fear-based. Abraham of Abraham Hicks speaks of segment intending. Great concept, segment intending. Segment intending is the practice of looking at your day in segments, little blocks of time and activities. You know, waking up in the morning, that's a segment. Getting out of bed, that's a segment. Washing up, that's a segment. Getting dressed, that's a segment. Eating breakfast, that's a segment. Driving to work, that's a segment. You get it? Those things are segments. You can make them up, and you can consider anything and everything a segment. So now, Abraham's advice is, set your intention before you start taking action in that segment. What do you intend? What do you intend? You just woke up. What do you intend your day to be? Oh, I didn't know I could intend how my day should go. Absolutely, absolutely. Therein lies the challenge. We don't recognize that. It's like, oh, I'm unaware of how powerful that is. Well, now it's time for us to become aware. When you're driving to work, before you start driving to work, what is your intention? And people that don't set the intention will let the environmental signals, the traffic, the lights turning red when you want them to be green, and other things like that, to color their day. I had a client in Switzerland. I hate driving to work. I hate driving to work. He was in the financial industry, Swiss banker. So why? Why do you hate driving to work? You have a nice car, right? He said, yes, I do. I said, why do you hate driving to work? And upon questioning, he realized that he just accepted that when he got to work, standing around the coffee pot or the water cooler, they'd be complaining about traffic. They'd be complaining about the commute. And I suggested he could look at the traffic in a different way. Look at the beautiful cars and appreciate them. And if there are cars on the road, that indicates some level of prosperity. And if you're in a banking business, you probably want to have prosperity. And you could look around and you see people and you could feel good about it. You could be listening to music or something on a CD or some educational thing or whatever it is you want, or even quiet think time. But you could appreciate that drive. Like, I didn't know I could intend that. Sure. Why would you want to intend getting to work angry and hyped up and frustrated? Because you didn't intend something better. Like, oh, oh. After that, he applied that rule. He said, yeah, it makes a totally, it's a different experience entirely. It's fun. It's exciting. It's interesting. It's creative. Yes, it is. Intention is very causative. Abraham goes on to talk about this intention. When we set the intention for a segment, for a project, of anything you've got to do, set your intention before you start taking action. It makes it more mindful, but it does something else too. It's almost as if you open the door in your mind before you physically open a door, the physical action of opening a door is easier because you've already rehearsed it. It's like having a dress rehearsal. Nobody is going on a Broadway play or any other activity of any significance without rehearsal. And it is this intention is, it prepaves our path. It's like an icebreaker. It breaks through any energetic resistance there may be. And there's going to be energetic resistance. If you have intentions, you're going to have counter intentions. Intentions that oppose your intention. Intention, counter intention. Here's how it works. You want to do something. I intend to fill in the blank. Your mind, in an effort, largely your ego, in an effort to protect you, is going to go, oh, well, you know, you might want to put that off. You might not want to do that. There's some risk involved in that. You haven't done that before, and that's just an awful waste of time, and there are more fun things to do, and all of those energies are going to come up almost as distractions from our intention. You go, huh, yeah. It's like a sales presentation. Your intention is making a sales presentation of what you want to bring into physical manifestation. Your counterintentions, that part of your mind, your inventory of comparison material that says, oh, that's threatening, that's dangerous, that's risky, you could be embarrassed, people could notice you, fill in the blank, is making a sales presentation or bringing up objections to your original intention. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What do you listen to? Your intention or your counterintention? I'll tell you what. When we listen to our intentions, we're going to get better or what we want or better. If we listen to our counterintentions, we're going to be thwarting this natural impulse to create, to move energy, to be causative, to make things better. And when you hear these things, all we have to do is recognize what they are. They are largely efforts of the ego to protect that first driving need. Oh, you might be criticized. If you do that, might be criticized. If you try to walk 2 miles, you might be criticized. People driving past you might think this of you. Defend ourselves from criticism, emotional or physical attack. We've got to become aware of our intentions. And we put our attention on our intention. We're going to be so much better off at causing the life, creating the life, drawing into physical manifestation the life that we want. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. we know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.